Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to review the 22nd race of the 2024 Formula One season, the Las Vegas Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Timo Albers-Daly and Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you?
I'll be honest. I think watching the Grand Prix might be a bit of a stretch. I think I maybe watched every one in five laps. But then I watched the highlights today to have a bit more of an idea of what happened. And it turns out that I myself just woke up for the highlights of each part of the race.
You sort of conveniently timed it to not miss anything.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good enough, I suppose. Timo, yourself, did you get up at silly o'clock to watch the race?
I did, and I was quite chuffed with it. I mean, last year we had absolutely no expectations going into it, the Las Vegas mentality and all that, and I did exactly the same this year, and that's probably why I enjoyed it as much as I did. Was it a classic Grand Prix? No, but there was a lot to like about it, and the stuff that I wasn't too fussed about because I was cozy, and it was early morning, and I still had my entire Sunday available to me, which is always nice and feels very F1-y. So I had a good time. What about you? Did you fit somewhere in the middle ground? Did you wake up for it and fall asleep halfway through?
No, I woke up for it, got it on just as the sort of title sequence was rolling. And I was like, yeah, well, we're good. Stayed awake, pretty much watched all of it. I remember only taking in the audio part of maybe the sort of penultimate 10 laps because I just sort of was dozing off a bit, still in bed.
I just assumed you were zoning out Profty in the background because you just managed to get it down to a T at this point.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to speak carefully about my contacts within that, but yes. hey, job opportunities are coming up and going away again. I got to be kind to these people because they could become colleagues. Anyway, we'll move on from that and we'll jump into the news because, of course, the important news that we'll kick off with is finally, for once, the news has timed itself well for recording of this podcast. GM, General Motors and Cadillac are closer to joining Formula One. Well, to say closer, it's pretty much agreed. They'll be joining Formula One in 2026. Statement released literally about half an hour before we hit record from Formula One said, Formula One has maintained a dialogue with General Motors and its partners at TWG Global regarding the viability of an entry following the commercial assessment and decision made by Formula One in January 2024. Over the course of this year, they have achieved operational milestones and made clear their commitment to the brand, the 11th team GM in Cadillac, and their GM will enter as an engine supplier at a later time. Formula One is therefore pleased to move forward with its application process and will provide further updates in due course. Mario Andretti has conveniently also joined General Motors as the board of directors and sort of to be a controlling part of this. Zak Brown, a chronically online man, has already tweeted about this as well in support of the team's impending arrival. And I will say, this all comes out after the sort of new president-elect in America, someone who is very much for, to purloin the phrase, making America great again and backing American industries. It's not wholly surprising that given that one of the sort of courses of action that Andretti were taking was putting their sort of hand entry to the American House of Representatives and going, what do you guys think of this? And launching some sort of civil case. Now, obviously, with a different man steering that sort of ship, the result might have been a lot more difficult and a lot more problematic for Formula One. So it's unsurprising that all of a sudden maybe the sport has rolled over to GM and Cadillac entering. But there, that's my skeptical thought for the day.
I'll believe it when I see it.
I was saying the same thing just before you joined to record this. I'm cautiously optimistic with it, but because of recent years with F1, the FIA, everyone in particular over there, I've got trust issues with them, so I won't necessarily believe it until I see it. And as I was saying to you, Jesse, just now, when lights go out on the first round in 2026 and they're going round the full lap, I'll be going, okay, it's looking good. Let's see how this goes.
So when we get to Albert Park in, March 2026 for the first of 58 rounds of that year's Formula One season, You'll go, they've made it. They're here. I believe it. So you two remain sceptical for different reasons. I remain sceptical as to how they've somehow sort of had this sudden about turn.
I don't necessarily care too much about how it happens, as long as it does.
As long as it does.
Turn some blind eyes, yeah.
Otherwise, if it doesn't, what's the point? What's the point of doing it again for the same
This is why she didn't want to say too much. She's going to set herself up if she's not careful.
She's going to get wound up by the consistent inconsistencies of the FIA and Formula One. Speaking of the consistent inconsistencies of the FIA, a new story that broke actually before the weekend, but we somehow missed it because we were all a bit concerned with Nils Vittich being fired and replaced. Paolo Bassari has left his position as the FIA's compliance officer. This is the latest high-ranking FIA official to leave the organization as a growing discomfort with Ben Salaya's leadership spreads. This is generally something that's actually a lot more sort of broadly spoken about within the sport that people really actually understand. There is a sort of the fact that Ben Salaya does not understand the sports and the sports that he controls as the head of the FIA, and he is losing the ground underneath him. The people that he is supposed to have as his operating team do not support him or his actions or decisions, and the net result is an FIA that is slowly crumbling, and we're starting to see spin out from that, as we've already seen with the likes of Nils Vittich being fired and then just replaced with the guy from F2 and F3 going, it's basically the same thing. He can do that, can't he? So I'm going, I guess so. Thankfully, Las Vegas was a relatively quiet weekend for him to try and control.
Well, yes on the on-track action, no on the off-track action. I don't know if either of you two saw the social media clip of him doing the rounds.
I didn't see a clip of, what, Ben Salaya or the new race director?
No, the new race director.
Oh, what, littering?
Yes.
Oh.
Going out of his way to litter as well. Oh. Safety car stops as they're going around the track. He gets out, goes to the edge of the track and just chucks whatever it is there instead of, you know, keeping it in the car, finding a bin at his earliest convenience, you know, like a normal person, and just tosses it aside, gets back in the car and off they drive and everyone going, Was it exactly the best behaviour?
Was it like litter that had blown onto the track and he simply picked
it
up?
No, it looked like it's... No, no, he got out the car, took it out of his pocket, already had it in his hand, and then just...
Are we sure he didn't give it to like a... I don't know what I was
saying. No, there was no one there.
Unless there was a marshal there, but then wouldn't you hand it to the
marshal? We didn't see it from any of the angles.
Yeah, just sort of chuck it on the floor and expect someone else to come along and pick it up. That's a bit...
So there's that, but then also you're saying about MBS, it's quite interesting all this is happening because there's obviously an election next year for his role, and he's obviously going to be expected to go for that. We don't know if he's going to have any competition, but you'd be surprised if he didn't have any competition and how well that might go for him. So interesting times indeed. He might be the latest in his own kind of... casualty lineup if he's not careful.
Yeah.
Which makes me sound a bit mafia there. That's not a threat, that's just an observation.
Yeah, it's a little bit Sopranos from you.
Who do you think has more employees that have left the business, FIA or Alpine?
It's dead heat at this point in time.
Close third, Red Bull Juniors.
Yeah. Close fourth, Red Bull. Anyway, it's like more positive news. We have news of the 2025 grid for Formula One Academy, and Elba Hurrup Larsen has joined the team, the grid, which is great news. She's joining Tommy Hilfiger, the Danish driver we replacing and racing for them, and she'll be replacing Nerea Marti. My brain is completely putting all
there. There we go, you got it.
Yeah. But I got the sentence out. She's replacing Nerea Marti. She's racing for Tommy Hilfiger, 2025 Danish driver, Elba Hurrup Larsen. She won the 2023 edition of the FIA Girls On Track Rising Stars program and has already made her single-seater debut, scoring points in the Indian F4 Championship this year, competing in Madras and Chennai, where she had a highest finish of 6. And actually, the Indian F4 Championship is not one to really be mocked. It is a pretty good feeder series. A lot of people who go on to do the UAE feeder series often dabble in that one. I know that a couple of the drivers from W Series, when that was a thing, have since been on and raced in Indian F4. It is a very competitive little series, and people do use it as like a great winter series because it's sort of obviously
hemispheric.
It's also great to see that the FIA Girls On Track Rising Stars program has actually produced someone that's worked their way through the ranks now as well. It's a system that is actually starting to work. So now what we need to do is get one of them into F3, goddammit. Meanwhile, Courtney Crone also joins the grid for next season. She was one of this year's wildcard entries, racing in Miami, finishing 14th and 11th in the sprint and feature races. But yeah, again, we're seeing the wildcard entries. They prove themselves. They get the seat for next season. So it's probably...
Well, this is the thing, right? On the one hand, you've got a wildcard come back. We'd like to see it. Now bring back Hina Gaten because she was the best one that we've had so far in months. But I think her saying last time we were reviewing F1 Academy, all we were talking about it with driver news, I was curious to see who we'd get coming in next year, because obviously a lot of drivers that we have there at the moment can't come back because of the 2-year rule. And I was saying, I want a bunch of people I don't know. And I didn't know who she was until this came along. So box ticked, very happy about that, because it means that we're finally getting to maybe, as you say, the people who will get to do the full thing properly, to get into F3, to get into F2, with the hook of getting into F1. And we might not be her, but at least it's someone where you can conceivably think it.
Yeah, the pathway and ladder of ascension is looking clearer and clearer each iteration that it's run through, and each time it's going from a better starting point and it's going to a higher finishing point, and we're seeing the progression that we want to see. So it's good. It's a great time, I'd say. We'll move on then to some more feeder series news, and Kian Shields steps up to Formula 2 for the final two rounds with AIX, replacing Niels Kuhlen. Context, Niels Kuhlen has done two rounds in Formula 2, one round in Formula 2. He's been dabbling in Indy Next. He's going to carry on with that in 2025, moving from HMD to Chip Ganassi. His dad invented bookings.com. Importantly, Kian Shields finished 30th in F3 this year. So clearly the ladder of ascension for junior drivers is still perfectly fine, Timo.
Well, with the highest finish of P14, 0 points, and being the lowest ranked driver out of everyone who competed full time this year, you can't really argue with the facts of why he deserves a seat in F2.
I mean, by that metric, Sophia Flush definitely deserves a seat in F2. If we're moving
you're
up,
finally seeing
Shields,
things my way.
Yeah, I've drunk the Timo Kool-Aid, and I'm saying, look, if Kian Shields is moving up, we need to be moving Sophia Flush somewhere. Although likely we'll be moving Sophia Flush to Formula E, because of course she had the recent all women drivers test as well. So still things on her plate that way. Otherwise, that's pretty much all the news out of the way. We'll jump into the important section, which of course, the Grand Prix. And this is now the first season where we've had four teams achieve 1-2 finishes. And the first season in a while where we've had this many multiple race winners, 7 of them. Timo.
Quiz time, the pair of you. I fell down some rabbit holes post Grand Prix. So I saw this note. So it's kind of your fault, Jesse, for sparking this. So you've only got yourself to blame. Like you say, it's the first time we've had this many different race winners for a while. 2021, we had 6. Probably seems a bit longer because of Verstappen and Red Bull. We actually did have 6. 2012 then was obviously the last time we had 8 different winners, because we had that at the start of the season. When before that was the most recent time we had 8 different winners?
1997.
No.
Earlier or later?
Later.
Oh.
You've had your guess. I'm waiting to... I've got other things. This isn't the only question. No, you're Billing.
After,
see you, Billington.
After 97.
Yes.
So I would have gone.
It's. Yes.
2007. I don't know.
Oh, nearly 2003.
Oh,
interestingly, Schumacher, Raikkonen, Montoya, Barrichello, other Schumacher, Alonso, Coulthard, and Fisichella. 1985, 83, and 1977 all had 8 different winners as well. But which 2 years had more?
We're going to have somewhere from the 70s, surely.
I thought 60s.
The 60s. The 70s, it's going to be sort of a melee of the Cosworth DFVs all working or something. I don't know. 1978.
You mind?
Maybe I go even.
I mean, there's 2 options here. There's 2 years.
I'll go 1958.
Okay, Jesse, you were closer. 1975 had 9 different winners: Lauda, Fittipaldi, Reutemann, Hunt, Regazzoni, Pace, Scheckter, Mass, and Brambilla. But 1982 had 11 different Grand Prix winners: Rosberg, Pironi, Watson, Prost, Lauda, Arnoux, Tambay, Alboreto, De Angelis, Patrese, and Piquet. Which, final question then, which year had the least amount of entry? And there is, because obviously we've got a similar number across multiple years, but this is, you'll see why, not the lowest of that consistent number.
Last year?
Yeah, 23.
You can see why. Right number, wrong year. It'll make sense in a minute.
Oh, it's possibly going to be like one of the Vettel championship years then, or maybe.
What do you mean, right number, wrong year?
Well,
Right number of.
2023 is probably the closest to it. It's not most. It's the correct number of different race winners. Here's the clue. And it's probably the closest to what I'm looking at in terms of how uncompetitive it was in that sense.
2013.
No, anime?
Oh, I think I might have figured, got it actually.
Now you can wait a second then. TikTok.
But obviously, it's one of the. I feel like it's more Mercedes dominance, but what year of Mercedes dominance?
I mean, again, you're not necessarily wrong there in to an extent, but you're thinking 2015.
No,
Anyway.
I wasn't.
Well, you should be.
Okay.
Jesse, what do you think it actually is?
2002.
No, but I like that you've had such confidence with that.
Yeah, I don't know why. I thought it was going to be like it was one of the Schumacher big dominance ones, but.
No, 1988, three different race winners, Senna and Prost dominance. Berger was the only other driver to win a race, and he only got one race win at Monza. So while.
Yeah, I did
So
it at Ferrari.
2023 was close in that respect, 2015 as well, close in that respect, 2014 as well, because you've got Hamilton, Rosberg, and Ricciardo, Hamilton, Rosberg, and Vettel. But
It
that
makes
for me, it was just like you only have one other driver doing anything, because the other two are just dun, 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 all the time.
sense because it's one of the most, well, it's the most successful car of all time. So, yeah.
But you weren't far off with your Mercedes thinking, so you'll get an extra point for that. But
Well,
there we go. I fell down a rabbit hole.
you confused me in the sense you said that Jesse wasn't far off.
Yeah,
What did you say?
numerically
It's
with,
like far, I thought
yeah,
Stella was
numerically with
far
the number of,
years.
with the fact,
So,
or
no, the
yeah,
number of different race winners
three race
rather than the
winners.
year.
That's.
We've never had less than three.
Challenge accepted. Although that would be an incredible, don't have a big
You
dull
said
season.
you made last year happen because you wanted to see what dominance looked like, and we suffered as a result. So do not ask for more of that.
Yeah, I was like, how are we
Didn't
going to
think
keep.
last year was that bad. You yes, but you are.
Well, I don't
I
know.
digress.
Anyway, we'll.
Las Vegas. We can talk about the actual
Yes.
Grand Prix now if you
We'll
want.
move
I've
into the
done my
actual
history
Grand
lesson.
Prix. And as always, we sort of pick our way through the Grand Prix, working through the constructors in current championship order. So we'll kick off with McLaren. Norris only 21 points ahead of Leclerc now. Piastri 9 points ahead of Sainz and 24. McLaren only 24 points ahead of Ferrari. It's interesting times for the Papaya team.
Yeah, Vegas didn't suit them pure and simple, and it's getting very tight for all three of them if they want to keep the positions that they currently have in the championships, respectively. Norris never really looked like a threat at any point this weekend, which is a shame in terms of the championship, because it would have been nice to see him fight a little bit for it. We've not had that much actual fighting between him and Verstappen for the championship. We have Austria and Mexico, and that's about it, really, in terms of all wheel-to-wheel stuff. So. Shame on that respect. Piastri with a slightly harsh penalty for the false start, I thought, but rules are rules, I guess. But they are now just at risk of losing both championships, and I'm taking Norris's fastest lap at the end a little bit personally because I was so on for prediction point for so much of that race. Lewis Hamilton kept breaking fastest lap, fastest lap, fastest lap. I thought, oh, I finally got something, and then the bugger got it at the last one. So I'm now fully in the Ferrari camp. And I hope they beat them by a point, and it makes it not worth it. So that's where I'm at with that one. But yeah, interesting time for McLaren. They still are doing a lot better than we probably thought they were going to at the start of the year.
Well, I think that's the issue, or that's the thing, that coming into this year, they didn't bring the momentum that they did from the end of last season. The damage was done in the first, what, six races, with Verstappen dominance. So, I mean, if you went back to those at the start of the year, you saw the dominance that Red Bull had. I don't think you would have even thought that McLaren would be leading the championship right now. And in some ways, they've done it because they've got two good drivers that are up there, whilst Red Bull's only got the one. And Perez has really fumbled them there.
Just so, waiting for that phrase in quite some time.
So I just think that maybe I think people perhaps being a bit harsh on McLaren, because they never came into this year, I guess, thinking they were going to win this championship.
I think that's, like you say, it's hard to measure them because they didn't know where they were going to be in some respects, and they themselves have proven time and again that they're not a championship-winning team yet because they haven't got that mentality and they have made a lot of blunders in places.
Yeah.
But you then look back and go, oh, but you're actually doing a lot better than we thought you would be doing. So are we actually happy with you, or are we disappointed? And it's, you're kind of, you're not sure, but you're both, I guess. Yeah.
It's difficult because, yes, they have made blunders. They haven't made the most of what they have had with that car. But at the same time, it hasn't just been a straight sort of, we've gone from Red Bull dominance to McLaren dominance. There's been Mercedes and Ferrari in there as well. You know, we've said earlier on that this is the first season where we've had four teams have won twos. It's been so chop and change as to who is dominant in each race. You know, I'm going into Qatar now going, well, I don't know who's going to be dominant there, and I don't really know who's going to be dominant in Abu Dhabi either. I didn't think that...
They're not Mercedes.
No.
Definitely not Mercedes. But you just don't know.
McLaren have struggled since, I want to say, sort of post-Baku, where there was...
I was going to say 2012, but all right.
But this season since Baku, because there has been that sort of rule change that sort of meant they weren't allowed to have that partially sort of movable rear wing, which was sort of fluttering around a bit before being DRS activated. And that seemed to, I don't know whether it actually had an effect, but there is a striking coincidence that when that wing had to be changed, all of a sudden their pace and their competitiveness was significantly different. We didn't immediately see it in Singapore because it wasn't a circuit that really relied on that sort of thing. But when we got to high-speed circuits like Las Vegas, like COTA, like Mexico, all of a sudden that McLaren wasn't quite as sort of competitive as it had once been. But then again, at the same time, Red Bull proved that you can take a Sawzall to the back of your car, hack off lumps of it, and boom, you've fixed it. So I don't know. It's sort of the magic art of aerodynamics can simply be, I checked with Andy, he said literally they would have just sent over a template. They would have printed it out in the back of the garage, pasted it onto the rear wing, traced the line, and then just cut it and smoothed the edges. And I love that really basic engineering in Formula One, but McLaren don't seem to be operating.
Is that like our 2024 version of gaffer taping something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's the opposite to gaffer taping Yuki Tsunoda's wing back into place, is taking a disc cutter and cutting off your rear wing. But it's the fact that McLaren don't strike me as operating on the level that Red Bull are when it comes to, we've got a problem, we need to find a solution to this, this is what we're going to do to solve it, we're going to work together as a team, we're going to pool our resources, we're going to make it work, and we're going to engineer our way out of it. McLaren just doesn't strike me as being currently the team that needs that.
Just remembered what you reminded me of, Eddie May. You reminded me with, are we happy with them or are we annoyed at them, both Ferrari in 2022. We didn't really have any expectations coming into that season because we didn't know what the new regs were going to do. So when Leclerc and Sainz kind of came out of the blocks and going, oh, okay, sweet, Ferrari's back. And then over the course of that year, fumbled it accordingly at several points. Spa with Leclerc, fastest lap, still great to me. And you just think, what happened here? And it's a team that weren't expecting to be where they are. So whilst they were incredibly far ahead of where we thought they would be, we were still somehow disappointed with them because they were so close to getting at least one title. So it was a shame for that, and we had to kind of figure out, why are we annoyed at them when they're doing a lot better? So maybe next year they'll be more together, they'll learn from it. Basics, hard to know obviously with everything else coming, but that's what it just made me think of there, and hopefully they'll see the similarities there, and that's just a case of history somewhat repeating itself.
Yeah, I think with McLaren this weekend, split by Yuki in qualifying, there was really something lacking from the car. And yeah, it was a mid-performance overall and a bit of an encapsulation of their sort of championship run, and certainly the run of Norris, one that's just sort of pitted out. And it's a bit of a shame that it's
I find it hilarious that in the build-up to this weekend, the F1 graphics department going mad with social media posts of all the different tabulations and formulations of how this championship battle that's incredibly tight, is it, well, could keep going down to the next two races. And then he pretty much is just anonymous for the entire weekend, and so is the rest of the team, and Verstappen just does whatever he needs to do, which is essentially just finish ahead of Norris. I mean, it doesn't matter really where, and he just steamrolls by and goes, yep, that's title number four, thank you, I'll be off.
Almost think we didn't overestimate McLaren, we perhaps underestimated what Max Verstappen can do.
Somehow, after three championships back to back, that is a statement that has veracity to it. We came into this season and went, oh, the Red Bull's good. And certainly at the point where Checo was up with him, we're sort of going, yeah, okay, the Red Bull's good again. But then as the Red Bull car has fallen away, but Max Verstappen has stayed up there, you begin to realize how much more of an added element he brings to that car. We'll get to Red Bull in a minute. We'll get through Ferrari first, though, who currently still sits second in the constructor standings. And, well, this is a quite an interesting one, really.
A very good weekend for them, I thought, overall. I mean, I know we had a little bit of ding-dong team radio afterwards, which was great for us as fans to see, but again, kind of gut-wrenching of Charles, because again, he's just trying to be a nice guy, and it's not the sport where being a nice guy necessarily works when you're in the car. Signs with another V3 and wanting to make his own strategy again was vintage him. If Ferrari weren't in with a shout of the title, they'd be having a lot more trouble keeping control of him, I think. It's the fact that he wants to finish on a high, show he can do that team spirit sort of thing and potentially open the door, or keep the door open for him with that team to rejoin them at a later date, maybe. Is what's keeping him somewhat in line there. Leclerc just seemed really near his element this weekend, and just overall too, and very sure of himself. And that was what kind of made that post-race radio that bit more gut-wrenching in that respect. But he's learning in that respect. I think he's becoming a really complete driver. We're seeing more of that, and next year title hopes are not out of the realm possibility. And yeah, I think this might be one of the places where next year, if we see him be a bit more ruthless, or if him not, I don't want to say helping Hamilton out, but not necessarily being as much of a team player as he was here, then this will be a race you look back on and go, that's why. Mm. The final note being, did you see the team radio? It wasn't broadcast on TV, I don't think, but afterwards I saw it where he's asking the team, can you tell Carlos not to pass me or whatever? And then Carlos passes and goes, can you ask him again in Spanish?
Yeah, I did see that one. The Carlos passing him thing, though, I think is a bit blown out of proportion. Yeah, Carlos had not been asked to not pass him, but not put him under pressure. So all Carlos did was simply wait for an ice open corner while Charles is still warming his tyres up post pit, and simply go round him in a safe and controlled manner. And yeah, I think that was why we saw
it's
that.
Just to be specific with your wording is the lesson there.
Yeah, and it was a really interesting moment. But when you speak about Charles, I agree with you on that, because he's becoming this incredibly combative and competitive driver, as well as one that's sort of ruthless when it comes to their actual driving as well. And that's what's going to be important when it comes to sort of his championship next year. And crucially, we've got Red Bull that are still trying to develop their way back to a good point. That car isn't by no means perfect, but we're seeing that if you can have a good 6-7 opening races to a season, much like Braun did in 2009 with Button, you can be pretty untouchable for the rest of the season. You just need to be consistent. If Ferrari can come out of the gates strong and prolongedly strong next year, they stand a very good chance. And with the driver lineup of Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton, probably the strongest driver lineup on the grid next year, without a shadow of a doubt. If Red Bull keep Checo, they almost certainly cannot claim that title. McLaren are good, but I don't think Norris and Piastri are close to Leclerc and Hamilton. Who else have we got that's getting close to being even touching that? Yeah, you've got Fernando Alonso out there.
Aston Martin wouldn't keep Lance Stroll around for nothing, Jesse. There must be some talent in there somewhere. It's just hiding really fucking deep.
I don't think it's in motorsports. His talent might be in something else, if we considered this. But that's the thing. Do you look at the other teams? They don't have a driver lineup that could go up against Ferrari. If they're come into next season focused, determined, and really ready to go with a clear definition of what they're looking to achieve each and every session, not just each weekend, every session, they could be a force to be reckoned with. And I think this weekend, like you said, has proven to be the sort of the crux of that matter and the pivot point that's turned it for them.
Last thing I'll say on that is I think McLaren would be the closest driver pairing that could take them on. But you've then got the Piastri-Norris situation where which one of them gets the priority if there is a chance for a title, whereas Ferrari, whilst both will want it, I think Hamilton wouldn't mind taking that backseat slightly because he's still finding his footing. It's his first year there. He's playing the team game. Leclerc's established. He wants to build something there as part of his final kind of hurrah in F1. So if that means helping to win two titles in a row, I think I'm not saying he'll be happy about it, but he's more likely to do that then and have less infighting go on than there would be a McLaren between Norris and Piastri, and that would make the difference for me.
He might do that as a more older and mature Lewis Hamilton, but you say about him sort of going into a team and building generally as he goes. Bear in mind that when he both arrived at Mercedes and when he arrived at McLaren, certainly, McLaren up against a multiple world champion in Fernando Alonso immediately goes in, dick swing, and goes, now, screw this, I'm head honcho around here, and made his name known.
True. So,
obviously,
in which case it won't matter what Leclerc does in that instance, he's going to have to deal with it and he will back up his team because he knows that he's in it for the long haul with Ferrari anyway.
Yeah. But obviously, there is the argument that Lewis Hamilton has matured. He is a more senior driver. He thinks more long-term. We don't quite know what his long-term game is going to be with Ferrari. But regardless, I've waffled on enough, Ellie Mae.
I was just about to kind of allude to that at the minute, I know as a Formula One driver, you're selfish. You want to be the best that you can be, and you want to be the most successful you can be. You want to be winning every race. Preferably. But obviously, at the minute, they know that everyone knows now that they're not going to be winning the Drivers' Championship. It's all about the constructors, so at the minute, there's not too much inter-team battles because they're both going for the same goal, mainly at the minute. But I think next year, I think we'll see. I think we'll see a different Charles Leclerc, one that's not going to quite sit there and take the team orders. And I don't think as well Lewis Hamilton's going to sit back either. Because again, I go back to their Formula One drivers, they want to win. He's going to want to win the Formula One championship. He's going to want to win that eighth title. He's not going to Ferrari just because that was his dream and that's what he wants to do before he leaves F1. He's going there to also win.
Put it like this then. Teamwork of absolute Ferrari domination, as ordered by Fred, and you wrap up the constructors with like six rounds to go, and you just absolutely wipe the floor with the opposition, and then you have six rounds to go, sort it out between yourselves and the championship, and then you can't. And we don't really mind as much then because we've got the important money sorted.
When has that ever happened in Formula One?
There's a first time for everything.
Not going to happen. Charles Leclerc's going to be winning his first championship.
Still get it. Six races to go. Bam, 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 bam. And then they figure it out between themselves. Hey, I don't think it's going to happen either, but let me have a nice thought for a few moments.
We can have some nice thoughts indeed. Meanwhile, Red Bull, Timo.
I may never be Verstappen's biggest fan, but I'm warming to him and I've got a lot of respect for him, and he has now won the title in the third fastest car with two Grand Prix to go, which I'm sure is just good luck. But you know, I did love the going up to Zach Brown afterwards, going, "Well, you said it could only be done in the fastest car." Just like, oh, we're having a roast early. I know it's Sunday, but lovely.
He was already on like his third beer at that point as well, though. So,
I don't care. I love that he got himself some Dutch courage to go and do that.
That Dutch courage.
No,
I don't think so.
He'd already crushed a couple of Heinekens. There's a great shot. You see him in the corner of like one of the shots of someone else's interview in the media pen. His like Red Bull media, like sort of PR person, walks up to him and from her coat pocket pulls out another can to give to him. It was absolutely perfect. There's another great shot. At some point, he's walking through the paddock. He's got his Yeti flask with one gin and tonic in and a second cup with another gin and tonic in it. Like, oh. He's having a grand old time.
He's earned it. He's earned it, you know? I mean, it was a championship drive in that league from him, and he proves that he was in control all season, really. I mean, there were a few hairy moments throughout the year, but it was his to lose, and it was never really going to happen. And you saw that with how he was choosing who to fight and when over the course of this weekend. I mean, the fact that he could be overtaken by Hamilton so smoothly, you never thought you'd see the day, you know? And yet, he knows that I don't need to beat him for this. I just need to finish ahead of Lando. So as long as I don't go behind him, and even if I do, I'm still very much in control of this. And it was just, dare I say it, simply lovely. And he won the title in Vegas by finishing P5, which, fun fact, so did PK, the father of his girlfriend in 1981. So, you know, full circle and all that.
I know.
There is, meanwhile... Come on, you know this.
Rosberg did it, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, but I was more going for the PK thing because it was relevant for the girlfriend. But I like what you added. Yeah, Perez, though, could only get as high as P10 after yet another atrocious qualifying. I mean, man oh man, what on earth is going on there? That being said, his double overtake on Lawson and Hulkenberg in a turn 14 was very neat and very, very nice. And as one comment I saw said, man woke up and remembered he was a racing driver for a moment and then went back to North.
Yes. Oh, I think for me, it was a brilliant and very measured run from Max. There was no throwing it away, no point in doing that to battle with the Ferraris. He did exactly what he needed to do and came out looking like the whole package as well. One of his most mature sort of moves. Perez, on the other hand, another relative stinker, outpaced by both RBs in qualifying. And this is a great statistic. In the past 10 years, Red Bull have had 20 Q1 exits. Perez has been 10 of those. Bear in mind how many other drivers have been through that team in the past decade. Perez makes up half of those Q1 exits. Max walking around with his cans of Heineken afterwards, I've already said, was for me absolute premium and sort of return to that the halcyon days of 1970s Formula One drivers where you simply arrive drunk, race, and then get drunker.
I miss James Hunt.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you, Ali, quickly, though. Do you think that Brazil and Vegas, either together or back-to-back, are two of his best Grand Prix to date?
This year, yes. Especially Brazil.
Because you see such a contrast. You see him just full Verstappen mode, yeah. And you see him as the mature, measured driver that he hasn't always been. But you've got these two very different but complementary and contrasting races from him, but it's the same driver doing exactly what he used to do to then seal the championship.
Yeah.
He's had four very different championships, hasn't he? And I think for me, this is the one that is my favourite because I think it really does show the talent of Max Verstappen because now people can't go, it's just the car. No, he's got the talent. You know, that car has been third or fourth sometimes, best car there, and he's always getting into the points. And there has been a couple of races this season, things like Austria, for example, where that wasn't his finest. But yes. Majority of the time, he was always consistently in the points and up and always kind of up there, whilst you can't say that for any other driver this year when they've had a mediocre car and then they've had a really dominant car in a certain race. You know, all of them have sort of had these up and down moments and he's pretty much just been consistent.
One more mini quiz for both of you then. Obviously, Verstappen's won four titles now, four different countries, Abu Dhabi, Japan, Qatar, and the US with Vegas. Vettel did the same thing, four different countries, four different titles. Three drivers have won it in five different countries. Which three, and do you know which five countries?
Fangio?
That's one of them. Do you want to guess any of the countries? One of them surprised me, so yeah. That might not help.
So let's think where Benji was later.
So looking for five different countries. You won each one in a different one, which was quite impressive, I thought.
Italy, Switzerland, France, Argentina, and America?
Really? No, you've got two countries there.
Italy and France.
Italy.
Argentina.
Switzerland.
Switzerland, not Argentina, which I just find hilarious because it's Switzerland and
Worse.
They have the last one in Spa, Belgium.
Spain is first, Switzerland is second, Britain is third in Aintree, Italy fourth, and then Germany is fifth. Schumacher technically did it in, he did it in five different countries, but had, hang on, I've confused myself. The one, yes, it's curious. Yes, sorry. He's had Australia, he had Japan twice, but it was two different circuits because the first time he did in Japan, it was the Pacific Grand Prix rather than the Japanese Grand Prix. Then had Japan as Japan, Hungary, France, and Belgium, and then obviously Lewis with Brazil, Italy, Ota twice, Mexico twice, and Turkey.
Yeah. Here's a fun statistic.
I fell down rabbit holes.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to reel them out somewhere.
you spent a lot of time on the internet this week.
I
Anyway, Red Bull out the way.
did resist saying I went on the internet and I found this.
Thanks. I think we can say that we've pretty much covered Red Bull there. Max, great. Checo, bit of a woofer. Meanwhile, Mercedes, wow.
Yeah, I mean, none of us, including them, probably saw that coming, especially just pure domination by Russell. I mean, you look at not even just from qualifying in the race, all of the practice sessions, all of the qualifying sessions within before getting to pole, it's almost pure perfection from him and the team as a whole all weekend long. It's a shame we couldn't have seen Hamilton qualify near the front because that could have been an epic fight between the two of them and potentially his last win with Mercedes, as we were saying earlier. Qatar and Abu Dhabi are not great for them on the heat, but then again, who knows? They were also on the front row last year, I think. And yeah, it's a shame that Hamilton's probably last win with Mercedes is going to be that inheritance from Spa because of disqualification. But Hamilton has now finished on the podium at 36 different circuits, extending the F1 record that he already had, which is just nice that he can keep doing those Hamilton things. Yeah, Russell's kind of reminded me of Leclerc a bit. I don't know about you two, but in terms of coming up through F1, making mistakes as we've seen, but then learning from them and becoming more sure of himself and translating that into results, I think he's now definitely ready to lead the team and fight for a championship next year. And I think Norris is now the next one to have that journey because we're seeing the mistakes we're seeing there. I don't know, lack of confidence, but we're not seeing as complete a package as we're seeing from Leclerc now after his troubles early on. And as we've seen with Russell, Russell seems to be going, okay, this I joined Mercedes at an awkward time, but that's not going to stop me from doing this. And I have been taking it to Hamilton. I've been beating him. And now I'm ready to take his place. No, it's not a matter of Antonelli replacing Lewis. It's a matter of Antonelli replacing George. I mean, George is the one who's actually been stepping into Lewis's role.
I think Charles and George got lucky because they had Williams and Alfa Romeo Sauber to be their sort of entry points into Formula One. Lando came into it with McLaren, which was decently mid when he arrived, and sort of the team has progressed forward since. And as a result, he's never had that opportunity to sort of float around the back and sort of hone his racecraft, get accustomed to the sport. Everything he'd done had been sort of relatively high profile, and that doesn't give you the leeway that you need. We've already seen that sort of driver development in Charles and George, and they've sort of emerged into Ferrari and Mercedes as these incredibly well-formed drivers. And it's only through the heat of this championship have we noticed that difference with Norris, and the fact that we're now seeing Norris make those final sort of steps, those final bits of learning and achievement to his sort of driver ability in the midst of a championship battle, which is not the best place to do it. And yeah, it's an interesting comparison to draw, and I think it speaks volumes for sort of their pathways and abilities as drivers.
I just find it extra interesting because obviously we've got Lando as being, I suppose Albon's the other one, but we've got less to do with him because he's kind of done the reverse of what the other two have done, is have more or less start in the top team and then go backwards in not a bad way, but you know, it's kind of there's a different path there. And I think it's interesting that we're getting this sort of look at them now as we're about to get an influx of brand new drivers for next year to see how long it takes for them to go on this process or if they have a different route entirely. You were going to say something anyway.
I think it goes back to what we've talked about earlier in the year, that it goes back to mentality and what's sort of going on inside their minds. I think if you look at things like, was it Canada with Russell? You spoke a lot about sort of mentality then, mindset then. I think we said that he needed to sort of work on that. I think now he's got a sort of a few wins under his belt. I think that's also helped take the pressure off in his head a lot as well. And I guess as well, it's things like the media and things like that. You don't have the media piling on Russell as much as someone as you look at Norris. And Norris as well, he is someone who's very, very hard on himself. And I think he's going to have to somehow change that if he wants to be up there winning championships and whatnot, because he can't keep looking back at past mistakes. He's got to move forward and just take them on the chin, I guess. Learn from them, obviously, but not hold on to them as much as I think he does. And I think that will help him clear his head a bit. It's things like, you know, when he starts on pole and then he always gets overtaken sort of within the first few corners. If you kind of keep that in your head, then it's probably going to keep happening until something changes and your mentality changes. And then it will then hopefully stop happening, because you can't keep trying the same thing and expect a different result. So, yeah, I think it very much comes down to it's difficult, because even you look at Hamilton after Brazil, he was ready to pack it all in with Mercedes.
I think he took Toto's quote in or out of context first and went, oh, all right, shelf life my ass, I should go and do this.
You can see it happens to the, you know, 7-time world champions.
But you see how he's been able to learn how to bounce back so quickly. I know we had a bit of a break between those two Grand Prix, but he's had to work on that. As we've learned over the course of this year, he's come out and had conversations about how he's felt at times as well. And he was maybe just better at hiding that at the time than Norris is. He's very kind of public about how he treats himself and all the rest of it. And to kind of echo what you two were saying earlier, it's interesting that he's like this, because like you say, there's just that pressure to perform because you're in there immediately with McLaren, whereas if you're Leclerc or Russell, you've got Williams and Sauber, who good teams, but you're not expecting the world from them, so they have this time to just develop themselves, get used to everything, where he's kind of expected to perform. And I wonder, going back to what I was then saying, with drivers for next year, how will we see that? Because I think drivers like Ben and like Lawson, if he's there, and Ewan potentially, and Bortoletto, they'll all have this kind of, these cars are capable of things, but we're not expecting you to go out there getting podiums and win straight away or anything like this. Whereas Antonelli, he's going to be in the Mercedes, and he's already got this massive pressure from this year, which we've talked about a lot, Jesse, in F2 reviews, and him not kind of hitting the mark as much as a lot of people thought he would, and how that's already put a bit of an asterisk next to him. And the only driver we've seen coming in recently with that kind of pressure on their shoulders, but being able to just, oh yeah, I'm good, was Piastri. But he's just a whole other league of talent. So he's just natural talent and Kimi Raikkonen-esque personality in one, which is just an excellent combination. But I wonder if we'll see a repeat of that next year with Antonelli, because like you say, there's that more experience, because you know it's Mercedes. Whereas with Sauber, with Haas, with Alpine, there's less riding on it, because you're like, okay, Alpine, yeah, they got a double podium in Brazil, but that doesn't happen too often. And the same for Haas, haven't got a podium yet. Williams, they're still working their way back and all this sort of thing. So I think that's going to be one of the interesting things to look at and try and maybe see if we can find a psychologist to talk to about this, to see what they think at some point.
There's definitely an argument for the interesting sort of mental psyche of the drivers that handle that pressure stepping up.
and Piastri is one of the ones that seems to have done it best. But we'll see how it pans out. Either way, though, it's been a fantastic weekend for Mercedes, even if they don't know where that pace came from. It was much the same as Ferrari here last year. It's the cold allowing them to push on the tyres and make the most of them without having to worry about them graining, overheating. And just a great strategy brought Lewis back into it as well. I think that can't be forgotten, is the fact that they hugely sort of overcut everyone with Lewis, and it moved him right up into the pack, and then he was able to pit free of traffic. Yeah, and it was a great strategy, and that little bit of sort of spicy thinking that Mercedes does every now and then. They're known for being sort of reliable, very straightforward operators, but this time around they were sort of, they played fast and loose with the rules, and it worked for them. And yeah, it's rekindled my excitement for the span of time that Lewis is like to spend at Ferrari. Moving forwards though, of course, Aston Martin, and well, they've been pointless since Singapore, and they're sure enough in their standings at the moment to not lose out on where they are, so fifth. But I think that is a better representation of how their season's actually played out. They've got fortunate with fifth place this year, I feel. If you'd done it on their more recent sort of abilities.
Well, yeah, I mean, essentially not quick enough to get anywhere near the front four, and everyone else behind you squabbling or is Sauber. So Alonso can just carry the team and it goes all right, and fifth looks all right, and they can justify keeping Lance there. But as a team, you look at 23, 24, they've just fallen off a cliff in true Coronation Street style, and not great for Aston Martin. You wonder how soon can Adrian Newey work his magic there, and can he work his magic there?
Can he do it before Filippo Drugovich is too old and before? Who have they got driving for them in Formula 2 at the moment who's part of their development team?
Aston Martin?
Yeah, they have.
They have anyone?
They do. Formula
2?
Yeah, 2024. Who is their driver?
Crawford.
Yes, Jack Crawford.
Sorry, Jack. What about you?
Yeah, Aston Martin development driver. So, we'll wait and see what they do.
Hawkins, I'm like, she's not in it.
No. Although it'd be interesting to see how she gets on there, but that's an argument for a different day. Ellie May, have you got anything to say about the incredibly mid performance of Aston Martin?
Is it all?
No. Okay. Excellent. More importantly, though, Haas, who bounced back up to P6 in the standings.
Ah, you got to love it, haven't you? They're not giving up there to fight and Hülkenberg. He really deserves a shot at a team, and I don't think he's going to get the chance, which is really annoying, because if there's an opportunity, then Sainz is going to go to Red Bull if they want him, and there's no room anywhere else. And it's just a shame, because I'd love to see him in a top car just for a season, just so we could see what. Well, it's just really, really nice. But as well, I think the Lawson and K-Mag overtake. K-Mag was probably looking at this guy going, "Oh, it's mini me. I'm not an era to do be that ballsy with someone like me for quite a while. Maybe there's a future for me. Maybe this is my legacy. It's going to be Liam Lawson. I'll be his driver coach, or I'll come in and help him out occasionally." The respect that those two had to have for each other to not fumble it into a wall in that part of the circuit was impressive. And I'm going to miss K-Mag for that kind of stuff. Because he's going to go, "You can overtake me, but I will make you work for it." And Lawson's going, "Yeah, I'm up for that. Don't worry." And just a really solid pair of drivers. It's going to be interesting to see what the team can do next year. If they have this car, then Aston Martin, I kind of want them to go after Aston Martin if they're going to. If you think about it, if Adrian Newey can't do anything for next year's car, really, which he's unlikely to be able to do, and you're going to focus on 26, then
Haas have a pretty good shot at P5 next year.
You kind of really want Haas to go after P5, don't you?
I think they could do it. I say, if we keep up with this car development and this team development as well, the people behind the scenes, the structures and the sort of confidence that Ayoko Matsu's brought in has been fantastic. And Behrmann and Ocon will have some interesting toys to play with next season. And yeah, Hülkenberg continues to be a real pleasure to enjoy racing, as does Kevin Magnussen just sending it because he has nothing left to race for, which is beautiful.
And then that's still... It still makes me question whether Haas should have got rid of K-Mag. I think they did it too early. They signed up their drivers too early. Because we've seen, I guess, maybe it's because the pressure's off. I don't know. But I think we've seen sort of a real resurgence from Kevin Magnussen these past few races. And I don't want to see him go now, because I think
maybe he's the opposite of Bottas and he thrives up a 1 year contract. Maybe you have to do like a race by race contract, and that's where he gets his thrills. Like, you know what, sod it. If you're not going to have it for the next race, I'm going to go all out. All right, this is a weird way to sign you for a year or two, but let's do it.
If I mean, I don't want to see him go, but obviously he has to. I'd quite like to see him in rallying.
I was thinking NASCAR.
NASCAR, or he'll go back and
I'll take both
sports car stuff. We'll wait and see. But either way, it's exciting times being a Haas fan. So Haas chap, friend of the show, I'm sure he is all over the moon. Meanwhile, Alpine had an interesting time. And I have actually just found out the reason behind Gasly's engine failure as well. And you can blame Yuki Tsunoda for this, but it wasn't the contact that he made with Yuki Tsunoda. It's a bit more interesting than that.
He threw a plastic bag at him.
No. The slipstream effect down the straight was so powerful that it caused Gasly's engine to over-rev. So essentially, he got a strong enough tow that under DRS, the Alpine reached 361 kilometers an hour. The engine RPM reached 12,937 RPM in eighth gear and then simply exploded. So essentially, the tow was so good that the engine couldn't run that fast. Just simply went, no, and just threw two cylinders.
If anything, that just makes it full circle brilliance, though, because it was just back to normal for Alpine as a team as a whole. You've got to think, because they managed to do a brilliant qualifying with Gasly, but then obviously this happened. Ocon somehow misses his pit box and has to go around with the lap because no one was actually out waiting for him, which is hilarious. And you just think, you just told him to box opposite of what Hülkenberg does. And so he does that, and then you don't come out and get him pissed off. So he has to waste a whole other lap with basically just a voluntarily drive-through penalty, then goes around and then does that. And then you've just got to love the fact that he actually told the team there was something wrong with the car. They go, everything's fine, and the car promptly blows up. I'm pretty sure there's something wrong with the car and helping us. We should start listening to our drivers, shouldn't we? Yes, you should. Which is it's a shame because, yeah, like I say, very strong qualifying would have been nice to see what he could have done. Because imagine if they managed to somehow get two back-to-back podiums with Gasly. I don't think it was ever really on, but it's also a weird thing that Alpine and Gasly could have pulled off. So, a shame in some regards, but also helping back to their bonkersly normal way of things.
Yeah.
Would you have, if you were Ocon, would you have just stopped and waited, or would you have gone through like he did?
I think
he'd be tempted to stop and wait.
But he went through because there was no one to call him in, so he didn't really sort of know where he was aiming for in that moment in time.
Yeah, but you'd have an idea.
You'd have an idea, but at the same time, the
just
last
do thing what to Lewis do did with McLaren, so
pull into the wrong pit
keep
box.
Going, just keep going, keep going.
I don't know, I think
someone come out.
I would
hope that someone services you.
Just keep going and then go around again, because you could...
Have we ever had that? Sorry, I'm sorry to keep it around, but have we ever had it where a team has accidentally service
the wrong car,
different car? Like, it's bad enough if you do it for like the wrong car, like you've put
the wrong car, or Gasly's car.
But have you ever done Haas have serviced Gasly?
No, I don't think so.
What do we do with this? Who do we penalize?
I don't think that's,
or do you just let it happen?
Because obviously, yeah. Because obviously you have to run tyres allocated to your car, because each tyre has its own barcode. You don't know which cars are running exactly which
I know, I feel like you'd still probably get disqualified or penalised or something, but at the same time, it's like, what do you actually do for that?
It's like a slightly more bonkers
version. Because it's so unlikely to happen.
It's like a more bonkers version of Sakir 2020, when they put Bottas' tyres on Russell's Mercedes, and all of a sudden they were going, oh, we can't do that. But instead of it being the tyres from the same team, it's the tyres from a completely different team. You'd have to have...
Why they should also bring back multiple tyre manufacturers, because then you can stick Michelins on the trailer car.
You know, all of a sudden it's got Bridgestones on, you're going, what the hell is this? But at the same time, like, you'd need two very incompetent teams for that to happen. And while we've said that we've got GM Cadillac kind of back in, we know that Marin Andretti is
just settling for Alpine.
I'm at the lead of it. We need sort of like a Marussia and a Manor to come back to really get that level of
Alpine and Sauber. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Sauber is slipping towards it, so maybe we only need one more team. I don't know. We'll see.
Then Stroll, I guess, sort of had the similar things. His radio wasn't working, and they weren't particularly ready for him either.
He made a bit more of an excuse. There was a brief point where they said, Stroll, if you can hear us, wave into the onboard camera so we know you're there. And obviously, he didn't hear it, didn't wave. So they had to just, everything was being done by the pit board, like the old style sort of hanging out over the start finish line, just sort of maybe read
throw something at him. Come in.
Donk, come in. Yeah, very, very good times.
They weren't ready for him, but he still was able to find a marker.
Yeah,
I think they found out what Lance Stroll's good at.
They had more stuff ready for Lance, but they weren't like properly ready with like tires coming out and everything. They had like the guy with the marker stick sort of beckoning him in and people moving the lines, but I think they were still missing like half the pit crew. They're like, oh, bugger, he's here. I think a lot of it also stems down to the fact that they had some weird running through the weekend, and it seems that some of the teams never practiced their pit in marker and call. So at some a certain point in the circuit, when you're at race pace, you know where the last moment you can officially tell your driver to box, box, pit confirm, and have the team be able to get out of the garage and into the pit lane in enough time. And they've had this before at Zandvoort with the Ferraris. They screwed it up. They got their box, box marker at the wrong point in time. So they would say box, box, and a car would appear before the drivers were out. And this is what I think has possibly hampered a few of the teams this weekend, as well as not having radios working and general miscommunication, because they think Hülkenberg was coming in and he doesn't. But speaking of dummy pit entries, I can't believe Sainz got away with it.
Sorry, can we talk about that at all? How did he not get penalised for that? That is a slam dunk, no?
But it got treated as a track limits thing. It was just like the first of a track limits infraction.
Oh, it's a track limits thing, and it's also an illegal move. It was a pit entry. It's a solid white line.
In Austria, they get slapped about silly for that.
But well, here, and again,
Austria with Lewis Hamilton, he lost control of the car ever so slightly going into the pits, and he wasn't even near getting sort of right at the pits, start of the pits. He was sort of just going into sort of where the white line is.
First left-hander,
he just
again, you think Germany 2018 with Lewis as well, when they decided to change their mind 2 seconds before he was actually in the pits as well, and you go, oh, that's
He sort of cuts or not the grass in, isn't it? Yeah,
like, do we need to have like a curb, a bit of grass and a curb to go, well, that's definitely bad. If it's a white line, then that's a completely different matter.
Or it
was just, it was one of the most dangerous things I've seen in quite a while. And I was surprised that it was Carlos of all people. I was like, that is not on. How are you getting away with this? I can't believe we didn't talk about this earlier.
Yeah, it was a bit mad, but it also puts me back in mind of good old Kimi Räikkönen of box, 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 box. And then, no, stay out, stay out, stay out. And it's like, guys, too fucking late now. It's like up hitting anyway. Great times. Kieran Räikkönen, number 7, coming back as well with Jack Doohan next year as well. So he's taken inspiration from one of his racing heroes and we're running the number 7, which is nice. Although, interesting question.
I'd love make Doohan and Kimi Räikkönen start a podcast.
That would be an interesting podcast. I don't know how chatty it'd be.
That would be very short, but I'd listen to all of it, all 10 minutes.
The question I have to ask, though, is Max Verstappen has run the number 1 for quite some time now. Does that mean you could enter the sport and take number 33, or does he still get rights to number 33?
I wouldn't dare.
It doesn't matter, because after next year, he's not going to be using number 1 anyway. So
yeah, it's going to be going to Ocon in Haas.
What really annoys me is, I know I'm never going to be in F1, but...
It's
annoying because someone's already got your race number.
No, my driver number...
Is it 69?
No.
17, but they retired it for Joe Bianchi.
Let me speak. My driver number was going to be number 9, and then Nikita Mazepin came in with number 9.
Oh, it's better than both of our suggestions there.
Yeah, that's actually funnier. Surely that's back available now.
It's back available, but now it's like...
No, it's under sanctions.
It's a tarred brush.
Yeah, Nikita Mazepin, Nikita Mazepin.
Marcus Ericsson, right?
Marcus Ericsson did number 9, yeah. But
it's been tainted now.
Yeah.
It's had to go. The number 9 had to go into witness protection.
Well, you could do what like Yuki did, because he wanted to run the number 2, but it wasn't available.
99 and go for Giovinazzi.
Yeah, so just double it up and pick up Giovinazzi's, which is currently available, actually. Oh, yeah, you sort of do the doublet trick. Hence the reason why I think Yuki ended up. I think, yeah, Yuki ended up with two because he couldn't have it because Stoffer used it more recently when he joined.
Well, your dragon numbers be. Don't say 69.
Well, he would take 99 because of Giovinazzi now, so you couldn't even take that. He'd be mean to you.
71.
Any particular reason?
That's the house number I live at.
Oh. I suppose we kind of all have stories.
Yeah, it's not a particularly exciting one. What would you go for, Timo?
I say that I don't have a particular story for this. I don't have any reason. I just quite like them, but 52.
It's not been used.
There we go. Dibs.
Yeah, and it's not even been apportioned as one of the temporary numbers either, so you're free to use it.
Sweet.
I'm
going to sort Hot Wheels made.
Max Verstappen hasn't used 33 officially since 2021. So technically, it's back on the market. Minardi.
They were also in this race somewhere. Learning curve from Lawson, I thought, for this one, because he's not necessarily formed as well as people were expecting. But at the same time, it's this awkward brush that we paint a lot of the drivers on this team with. That you get in Ricciardo, you're hoping that it's going to translate over to be an immediate improvement. Forgetting the fact that when Lawson came back in, it had been over a year since he'd actually been in a Grand Prix. And you've seen the same thing with Colapinto in a way for me. Initially, it seemed like a great idea, but then they realised that they're rookies in F1, and F1 will chew you up and spit you back out again. And that's definitely been the case for Colapinto recently, and giving him some rough lessons that he needs to learn, which is fine. That's not a criticism for him, it's just that's how it goes. And Lawson, I feel like, has been having his version of that. He's not had any massive crashes, but it's not been smooth sailing either. So I think he's getting that, what we were alluding to earlier with Russell and Leclerc when they were starting out. He's having his learning period, and he's going to do some things. That being said, he had that beautiful move and battle with K-Mag. So I like that there. A bit of a bounce back of sorts for Tsunoda. It felt like it was a really solid weekend for him. No notes really on him. He just kind of... He was quietly there and just managed to keep out of most of everything. And I think that's what the Grand Prix reminded me of a little bit as well, Monaco, in terms of is a race where we're expecting potentially a lot to happen. And a lot did, but not necessarily in the way we thought. And it was more of an endurance-style race in some respects. And it was the drivers versus the track rather than each other in a lot of ways. And Yuki was able to qualify well and finish well. And kudos to him for that.
Yeah, it's the first time he scored points back-to-back this season in a Grand Prix since Silverstone Hungary. So it's been a little while coming. Though he did have a very good streak of Miami Sprint, Miami GP, Imola, and Monaco for points earlier this year as well. So he's had some good form, and it's nice that we're potentially sort of coming back to that return at this point in the year.
What did he say?
When he clipped Gasly, he was like, oh yeah, I nearly shit my pants.
No, not that bit. But RB keep bringing drivers.
Oh, you keep bringing drivers and I keep not demolishing them, but keep beating them.
Yeah, it might have been demolishing.
I think it's beating.
Amusing fact there. Let me just check up the right. Yeah, so Yuki, he's just had his first back-to-back point finishes for a while. I thought, well, you'd rude not to look. The last time that Perez had back-to-back points finishes was Singapore and Kota, which I know wasn't that long ago, but feels like a long time ago.
When was it before that?
Then he was on a four race run before
Netherlands,
that.
Belgium, Hungary.
He had a 17th, and then had a couple of point finishes, had a double retirement, and then you get back to the start of the season where he was actually good.
Well, yeah, a marked decline in his sort of finishing rate. Williams. Yeah, rough time to be a Williams fan, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, first it was good to see Colapinto was okay after that 50G crash. Of all the places in the circuit to crash, it was not a particularly good one. But got back up there, did lead to an amusing joke that I saw somewhere, I can't remember who it was now, but about the new F1 Lego kits and Williams is coming ready-made in the box already.
Was it the reserve drivers? that did possibly, that
yes. Yes, yes, yes. And yeah, Albon on a terrible streak at the moment, but at least got some laps under his belt. It's time during a Grand Prix, but he's still not seeing the checkered flag for about three races in a row now. And just a really rough time for them.
Yeah, it's... I think, yeah, Colapinto, like you said earlier about Lawson, is learning lessons on the harsh competitive nature of what Formula One does. And he needed to learn the lessons at some point. It's just unfortunate that the way he's learning these lessons is so sort of painful and a bit destructive at times. But at the same time, he's still proving to be ferociously quick, out-qualified Albon this weekend, and looked up really good form. It did, however, feel a bit on the nose, or potentially just sort of terrible circumstance, that Brad Pitt's F1 film, after qualifying, filmed a sequence where Brad Pitt crashes and then collapses in front of the safety car. I don't know if you've seen the clips of it that were doing the rounds on social media. Just sort of like...
Give the man the Oscar, I say.
But on one hand, they would have planned that out. They would have known that's what they were going to shoot. What they didn't know was that it was going to seem a bit in poor taste because Franco Colapinto was going to bin it at 50G into a concrete barrier beforehand.
That's Hollywood. What are you going to do?
The beauty of making cinema. But yeah, strange times for Williams.
I'm just going to assume you want to remain silent anyway because you're not happy with the current state for Williams, and that's fairly understandable. I'll find some Nigel Mansell pictures and send them later.
I have purchased the W14B Lego kit with the mini Nigel Mansell.
That's not a surprise.
It's on pre-order, isn't it?
It's on pre-order. It'll come in March.
Do they? Yeah. Important question. Do they take the money from you now, or do they take the money from you in March?
Well, it's still pending.
It was going to be March, but now it's sooner because they've had to rebuild the car and they need a new station yet for it.
Yeah, Williams have asked for like an advance on all the kits sold because they need the money. The best bit was
going to do a James May and me the car out of Lego.
The best bit that got me is the Red Bull and the RB are 18 plus kits, whereas all the others are 10-year-old plus, because of course the RB has and the Red Bull has energy drink branding on it, which you can't market to someone under 18.
Hang on, surely McLaren's.
But how many of them have tobacco or vape or steak?
Well, this is a thing.
Sponsorship on it.
Amusingly, I was letting tobacco slide. I was going after vaping. That's an interesting thing I've got to reflect on, but that's a safe conversation.
And I was going after gambling. So
yeah, somehow the only Red Bull are the ones they've picked up on this. Could you flick through, like, obviously McLaren's got the Velo stuff, which is like vapes and stuff. I'm certain that if you look hard enough on the Ferrari, you can still find something linked to Marlborough on there. There is definitely going to be like a holding company that's sort of part of Marlborough. Like there is other suspicious brands that have got sponsorship tied to F1 cars. You're going, here you are, child.
Both Aston Martin still have Pironi and Ferrari still have...
Ferrari has Pironi at the moment. And
zero alcohol.
Yeah, it's zero alcohol, and also it's not a main sponsor, so I think therefore they can work around it. I think like Sauber doesn't always run the stakes livery. It has slight changes that it runs in the same way that potentially scaled down you won't see the Velo sponsorships on the little McLaren. However, all of those 10 kits are different. They've all got like different floor gates and sort of side pods to them. So there's a good bit of thought gone into them, and I'm going to be very broke when that pre-order comes through.
I already am broke, so.
Yeah. So you're just enjoying it and going, I might have a little Lego Nigel Mansell with me while we're at it.
Yeah.
He has the little moustache. They're accurate.
I'd be disappointed if he didn't.
Well, that was like the cardboard cutout that I saw of him the other day.
You're still not over that.
He didn't have his moustache.
What's the point?
Exactly. But if it did, then I probably would have stolen it. Somehow to take it.
That's the best segue we're going to get, because you saying what's the point was exactly what I've got written down to stake this weekend.
Yeah,
that's really literally all I've got. What's the bloody point?
I mean, it was almost a point with Zhou at moments. There were points where it was close to point.
I did worry. This is the one weekend I've not predicted and getting points, and Joe's going to go do this. And then I thought, oh, no, never mind. That'd be silly.
Well, when I watched one in every five laps, I opened my eyes and thought, oh, Joe's in the top 10. And then when I close my eyes again and woke back up, he was no longer there.
Yeah.
But I did get excited for a brief moment before I fell back to sleep again.
A short window of optimism for Jogra new fans and all eight of them.
It's mean.
Yeah. Is it? It's mean, but it's not untrue.
All of China.
Yeah, that's true. There's more than eight of them. yeah. It was, yeah, not a great weekend for Stake. I think that's all that really needs to be said on them. There's so little to say on them. Each week we get to Stake and we just sort of go,
has got his what's next?
Yeah. I think that potentially, Tim and I were discussing this in the pre-rec, I don't think it's an actual charity. I think it's just him joking. He's sort of stockpiling cash at this point because he's unemployed. The charity is him. For people who've recently lost their jobs, he said it with clearly a bit of a joke in mind when he was on Ted's notebook. Like, I've come to the conclusion there is no charity he's supporting, it's just him.
Well, I can do that.
I respect it a lot more that way. As much as I think the charitable thing is nice, simply selling merch so you aren't broke next year is also quite good.
I like the idea of someone taking that seriously and then taking him to court for saying this is not actually a charity.
This representation,
and just sitting there.
But then I would also question what has he done with all his money?
Speedos, bicycles, mullet wax, yeah.
It's not that expensive.
Wouldn't you do it properly?
Yeah, his mullet is nicely coiffured. And also, he has an expensive taste in bicycles. And VB isn't cheap these days. You've got to keep buying that, keeping his Aussie house topped up. I won't make that reference. It's way too nichely British to be understood by much of the audience. We'll move on then from our sort of race recap into our winners and spinners. Timo, your winner this weekend.
Very weak one, but it's got to be Max Verstappen, echoing what I said earlier. It's just masterful from him. These two Grand Prix backs are back. To me, I think Arturo is strongest for different reasons. And this one, it was just... It's just quite funny to see the contrast with how he used to be and how he is now. And obviously, we've seen echoes of that with Mexico, for example. But here, with these two World Grand Prix and this one in particular, did what he needed to, didn't mess about, no pressure, just got on with it, and then promptly got drunker as the night went on and said some excellent things and gave us some great moments. So, winner in my book.
Much the same on the Route 1 nature for me, Mercedes. They didn't anticipate this weekend being as good as it was, but they proved that they're still flexible enough to make those changes on the fly, and a masterful drive from George to hold on to the win, and a really, really solid recovery from Lewis as well. Those final sort of 10, 15 laps just consistently pumping in fastest lap is exactly what you expect from a driver of his caliber. And yeah, phenomenal stuff, really. Ellie Mae, your winner?
Stappen.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, relatively easy round. Spinners, meanwhile, Timo.
McLaren dropped the ball this weekend and it cost them a championship and might cost them another one. So. Potentially unfair considering what we were talking about earlier, but tough. Yeah. I'm going to be tough.
For me, Alpine, I think obviously there was a lot of practical errors they made across this weekend, not having a pit team out ready for Ocon, and also having an engine that was so sensitive to the slipstream that it over revved itself and sent piston number 5 to the moon.
I just love as well the contrast and comparison we have from Verstappen for Brazil and Vegas.
Alpine have got an even better contrast of double podium to retirement and...
There's something wrong with my car. It looks fine. Boom.
Yeah, they were looking at sort of Gasly's car, forgot about Ocon. Like, I'm sure there's something I've forgotten here. Ocon waiting for a pit stop. Ellie Mae, your spinner.
Probably me.
You did this strategically well, though, with the Grand Prix. You argued yourself into a good corner there. Or are you going for a different reason?
It was just... I barely saw it. My eyes would be awake for, like, half a lap, and then they'd be closed again. And then wake up again the next 5 laps. Be like, oh, Gasly's engine's gone, but now I'm going to go back to sleep.
But there are certain Grand Prix this year where you could have gotten away with that.
Yeah, but this one was a good one and I missed it.
Mm.
Yeah, I was just too tired.
Perhaps they could set it a bit later so the racing starts in Las Vegas at like 2 a.m. and that way it's at a reasonable time for people in the UK. That seems fairer.
I don't think we get to complain as UK viewers, considering the rest of the world is so buggered the rest of the time by European showings.
And the thing is,
if you were in Australia, Jesse, you would not be complaining at all about it.
Yeah, well, they should have invented the sport then, but Europeans invented the sport, but they get to pick the times. That's the way the cookie crumbles.
I like you, Australia. Anyone in Australia listening, I'm with you. Jesse hates you, but that's his problem. Take it
out. Do we have Australian listeners? I think we do have Australian listeners.
Not anymore.
Yeah, well, not anymore. My apologies, guys.
Even with the UK, we got up at, like, the race was at 6 a.m. It wasn't even that bad. It was just...
It wasn't. Anyway, no, I was just tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, to our listeners in... our listeners in Adelaide, Sydney, and... Brizzy, as well as our listeners, actually, we've got a couple in New Zealand as well, Auckland and Wanagari. So, yeah, hello to you guys, and I'm sorry that we're mean about times.
No, you.
Royal we.
No, just you.
Yeah, the royal we. Just
no.
Anyway, predictions review. It was just Tima and I making predictions, hence the reason why no one scored anything. Moving on.
I gave you both Brazil and Qatar to catch up.
Did we fuck?
I put all my effort into the fantasy F1 and that works a lot better for me.
Did it? I haven't checked to see how you did.
I'll tell you how I did. For Las Vegas, I came in first. And by quite a margin as well. Second place, Follow Tracks top three, 259 points. I had a golf. Follow Tracks at top two in third place, 251. My Nitrocross team then suddenly woke up for the first time this season and got P5. Incredible. Your top team, Jesse, was Jamie Racing in P13. Ellie May, Extra Magnifico Terrestri, P16. Sophia's F1 team, P37. Still got Ricardo. Probably should move that back. Overall, scored by Gunther Steiner is in first place with 4,788 points. Take a Stroll, P2, 4,741 points. And third, What's the Racing Point, 4,712 points. I am in P10 on the curbs. JB Racing, P13. Yeah, that's getting interesting. Ellie May's club team, P21, just 2 points behind Jeffy Cake Racing. You can do this, Ellie May. And The Greatest Moustache, P37. Only, I think, about 300 points off P36. So that's...
drivers with facial hair, get your act together for the next two races, basically.
You heard it, guys. Get your shit together. Ellie May's, that's her stern voice.
Yeah, get it done. With that covered, though, brings us to the end of this week's episode. I can't tell if it's been a long one or not, because I think we started recording a bit late. But otherwise, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back, of course, with a preview for the Qatar Grand Prix as we rumble into the billionth triple header we've had this season. In the meantime, Timo, where can the people find you?
Social media will be the place to find me and everything that I do. So t.elwes.daily.merkurbs.
Excellent. Ellie May, do you want to be found this week?
Unless you're giving me money, no.
Do you have something to give in exchange for the money?
No.
If you'd like to make a charitable donation to Ellie May, feel free to.
And you've already given to Valtteri Bottas, which you also consider.
The thing is, Valtteri Bottas is, you're paying to, I don't know, you're paying a rich man. Give me money, I'm basically paying it for my sick cat. So...
However, if they give you money, will you give them a nice jumper?
I can crochet one a jumper if they want.
Ah, there you go. So there's your option.
Yeah.
Better charitable cause than a nicely crocheted jumper. And in the meantime, if you want more from me, of course, I'm on social media at Jesse on Cars, and you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. Our latest issue is out on Wednesday, and it's a Mustang celebration piece because we got to November before we realized we haven't actually celebrated the 60th anniversary of the Ford Mustang this year. So we're doing that now. And you can also listen to more of me on the Classic Car Weekly podcast, which is now finally a thing and happens, as the name suggests, weekly. Otherwise, we'll be back, as we've already said, for the Qatar Grand Prix. We'll have our preview and review of that race weekend and all the curios that that circuit might bring with it, because we haven't been there for some time, have we? I can't remember. No, we were there last year. Yeah. Of course, if you look at Piastri, won the sprint race.
And it's also where Max Verstappen
won the title on last year.
For the second, first time on a Saturday, the second time he did that this year.
Yes, because that was a great one for weird quiz questions. So, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again in about 3 days or so.